the winner of the Let's Talk Bitcoin podcast competition. This is the Mad Money Machine. Hello, everybody. I'm Paul Boyer. I want to thank everyone who listened and voted for voting for the Mad Money Machine. We did it. We won it. Thank you. Coming up on this episode of the Mad Money Machine, we will pull something really fun out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. We'll take a spin at the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. We'll take a look at some shocking headlines and the Market Minute. I'll tell you all about my experiences going to the DC Bitcoin Meetup. And a major retailer says that he will accept Bitcoin in the future and then does it. Brandishing the blockchain to fight good versus evil, this is the battle of the century. So Bitcoin, Litecoin, and Feathercoin walk into a bar. Bitcoin orders a beer. Litecoin orders a light beer. And Feathercoin, of course, orders a bottle of water. Well, they enjoy their refreshments, and when it comes time to pay, Feathercoin asks the bartender, "Do you accept Feathercoin?" Bartender says, "We're not that kind of bar. We accept cash and Bitcoin only." Litecoin says, "What about Litecoin?" Bartender says, "Cash and Bitcoin only, bub." The Bitcoin reaches into his pocket, pulls out a 20 and slaps it on the counter. "Keep the change." Litecoin turns to him and says, "Why didn't you pay in Bitcoin?" Bitcoin says, "I forgot my wallet." Two Bitcoin miners walk into a Colorado bar. Bartender screams, "Hey kids, we don't allow that kind of hash in here."
"I guess I'm not surprised you can use Bitcoin to generate tax revenue for Colorado."
"I only found one dispensary that's willing to accept Bitcoin, but the rest of them, interestingly
enough..." "What's a dispensary?"
"A dispensary is, so previously marijuana was only available as a medical if you had problems with post-traumatic stress disorder or lower back pain, for example."
"There's a street off the hill in Boulder where if you went down the street, there was this little turn. Was also available there."
"Continue."
So, how is it to get a license?"
"So it didn't seem like it was terribly difficult. There were about 350 licenses issued in Colorado. Only 18 stores in the Denver area had completed that process by January 1st. I think the others were a little bit stoned. So the interesting thing is you can only spend cold hard cash, right? Because you can't pay for your weed, even as medical, for medical uses,
really, with
a credit card. Or a debit card, yeah."
"Why not?"
I guess the banks there are the banks around the country are unwilling to sort of get into that business quite yet. It won't be long, obviously. This is sort of the dawn of big marijuana, someone said yesterday, like the dawn of big tobacco."
"Oh, now I see what that lyric means. Seen it rain and fire in the sky." Meanwhile, Chinese web merchant Alibaba declares it will no longer allow Bitcoin to be sold on its website, saying, "We don't allow anything to be sold that can't be counterfeited." Kanye West sues the creators of the Kanye altcoin, leaving the door wide open for the Katy Perry coin. And singer Lily Allen tweeted what an idiot she was for not accepting 5 years ago 100,000 bitcoins for singing on Second Life, to which I say somewhere there's a really lucky guy who not only has 100,000 bitcoins, but didn't have to hear Lily Allen sing.
"Life's about film stars and less about mothers. It's all about fast cars and cussing each other. But it doesn't matter cause I'm packing plastic. And that's what makes my life so f***ing fantastic.
She could do a whole lot more consumption if she'd have taken those bitcoins, because at today's prices, the 100,000 bitcoins is worth $812 million. Once again, welcome everyone. This is the new Mad Money Machine, episode 4, coming to you on Wednesday, January 15th, 2014. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much once again for voting to make Mad Money Machine the winner of the Let's Talk Bitcoin podcast competition. You know, there were 18 entries total into their podcast competition. A lot of shows to listen to, and a lot of really good content out there. I am humbled to be selected the winner. Thank you so much for putting your faith and trust in me and your votes in me. I certainly am encouraged. I'm given confidence to go forward. And I'm inspired, and I want to make the kind of show that you'll want to listen to again and again. Starting with this one. You know, some people complain that Bitcoin's not anonymous, whereas the regulators complain that it is anonymous. And to me, for those who voted for the Mad Money Machine using their Bitcoin, it's fairly anonymous. I don't know who voted for me, other than one person, Jeffrey Thompson, who tweeted that he had sent me $20 in Bitcoin. And thank you, Jeffrey Thompson, for doing that. So the question is Bitcoin anonymous or not? I suppose, in the end, the NSA could go through all of the blockchain and all of the points at which the various addresses had received money and look at IP addresses connected to Bitcoin addresses and look at Bitcoin addresses connected to bank accounts through Coinbase or however, whatever exchange received the Bitcoin, and they could identify who it was tied to a particular public key. And then they could email me and tell me who voted for Madman Machine, I guess. But in the meantime, thank you so much, everyone. And it's a real honor. Once again, thank you.
The BitGive Foundation is a nonprofit charitable giving organization leveraging the power of the Bitcoin community to improve public health and the environment worldwide. Help us demonstrate the significant impact of Bitcoin in addressing these critical issues on a global scale. Support international giving in Bitcoin. Please visit our website at www.bitgivefoundation.org. That's www.bitgivefoundation.org.
Hi, listener. Here at Let's Talk Bitcoin, we're building a global network of correspondents able to contribute on-the-ground perspective when cryptocurrency-related information comes across their filters. If you'd like to join our global conversation, send an email with your name and geographic or cultural niche to apply@letstalkbitcoin.com. Just like Bitcoin, the only barrier to entry is your time and good work. Thanks for listening.
So I went to the DC Bitcoin Meetup Tuesday, January 7th. It's my first Bitcoin meetup. Actually, it's my first meetup of any meetups. It was fun. Richard Weston and Daryl Duane, the co-leaders of the group. Now, Richard got up and said that their early meetups consisted of two people. Well, there were 26 people here this time at a restaurant called Matchbox, which is a really nice venue down near Chinatown, 14th Street and T. Coincidentally, Matchbox is run by a guy I went to high school with in West Virginia. He wasn't there that night, unfortunately. I haven't talked to him since high school. It would have been great to catch up with Ty Neal. But that Matchbox is a really nice place. I left home early to get there in time to eat something before the meetup. The meetup was at 7, so I left at 5. 5 o'clock. Got down near the restaurant about 6:20. And it took me another 45 minutes to find a place to park. I actually found a spot near the restaurant and got out and looked at the sign and said, Resident 1, parking only. So I said, well, I don't really want a ticket. Drove around, found another spot. It wasn't any good either. A block or so away, there was a empty lot. There were 4 cars parked in this parking lot on a corner. No signs about it or anything. No machine to put money in. There weren't any lines on the space. I parked my car. I go into the restaurant next to it and ask them, you know, what's the story with this parking lot? How do I pay? And she didn't really know. She said, I think there's some guy that drives up in his car. And I said, how much is it? She said, about $10. So I went back out to my car, and there was a guy now in his car out there. He says, you're the guy in the white car? I said, yeah. He says, how long you want to stay? I said, well, about 9 o'clock. He said, that'd be $15. I said, what about $10 until 8:30? He said, okay. So he gave me a little sticker to put on my dashboard. And so I figured, all right, so 7 o'clock to 8:30, that should be good enough. Went into Matchbox and go up to the second floor in a sort of an area cleared out, no tables. There we were gathered, all of us Bitcoiners. And we started out, basically, we stood around in a circle. Richard talked briefly, and then he said, let's go around and everybody introduce themselves. And so I got to meet some people there. The one unfortunate thing was the place was a little noisy, had the music kind of loud, and some of the people weren't all that vocal, kind of talked real quietly, and I had to really strain and cup my hand to my ear to hear what they were saying, and even then I couldn't really hear. And that's unfortunate, because I really think I should have, you know, I would have found out some good stuff about these folks. One lady there, I'm sorry I didn't catch her name. Like I said, it was a little bit loud in there, but she said she used to work for FinCEN and now is a lawyer at a legal firm. And she told us that FinCEN will be releasing some statements soon, some more statements regarding Bitcoin. So we look forward to that. Hope it's non-news. I talked to a gentleman named Trone, who is an active trader in Bitcoin. He says he uses BitFinEx, BitFinEx, out of Hong Kong, to trade on Bitcoin. And he even trades on margin on Bitcoin. And apparently you can short Bitcoin using this system. I know people have been asking, how do you short Bitcoin? He tells me that the cycle shows that there'll be a large gain in April, which will max out in July. So be looking for that. Talked a bit to Kathy Reisenwitz. She runs the blog and website Sex and the State, sexandthestate.com. She mentioned that the upcoming Bitcoin in the Beltway conference, bitcoinbeltway.com, will have featured speaker Jeffrey Tucker, and she will be one of the speakers as well. I talked to Matt McKibben of Liberty Panacea Radio on Blog Talk Radio. He's very excited about Bitcoin. Talks about it often on his show. Well, I, you know, after all this standing around and talking to people, I look at my watch and it's 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock. So I'm thinking, uh-oh, I wonder if that guy's out there at the parking lot, you know, he's going to charge me another $10 or what. So I left and rescued my car, and he wasn't around. There was no ticket on my car, and I pulled away. But it's sad. I could have stayed till 10 o'clock, I think, and talked to a lot more folks there. It's a long, long way for me to get there. I don't know if I'll be attending again or not. I think if they have a Bitcoin meetup in Reston, Virginia, or further west, I'd love to attend it every time. Maybe I should start one. Let's pull something out of the Batman Machine Bitcoin tool crib. Well, I know Adam B. Levine has talked in the past about sending micropayments for content over the internet. Now it's easy to do with Tippercoin. Tippercoin allows you to send Bitcoin to someone through Twitter. Here's how it works. Go to tippercoin.com and you authenticate your identity when you sign in there via Twitter. They generate a unique Bitcoin address for you. Your account becomes activated when you deposit enough Bitcoins, at least 2/10 of a millibitcoin. Now you can send Bitcoins over Twitter by tweeting at anyone. They don't even need an account to initially receive Bitcoins. And here's the way you do it. You say, at friend, or at Mad Money Machine, thanks, I really enjoy your show. Here's 0.01 BTC, and then you put hashtag Tippercoin. A 1/10 of a millibit is in miner fees is automatically deducted from your account when you tip in that sense. Then the Tippercoin bot, which is at Tippercoin, constantly listens for every tweet containing either hashtag Tippercoin or at sign Tippercoin. The bot will then parse the tweet looking for the recipient and the send amount. As soon as the funds are sent, both you and the recipient will receive a confirmation tweet. And an account is automatically created for the recipient if they don't already have one. The recipient just needs to authenticate via Twitter within 21 days receive their Bitcoins. Otherwise, the Bitcoins are automatically refunded to the sender. Well, that's your Mad Money Machine Bitcoin tool of the week. Send Bitcoins to anyone on Twitter, even if they don't have a Bitcoin wallet. Go to tippercoin.com to get started. And like the best things in life, it's free.
The best things in life are free. You can keep it for the birds and bees. Now give me money. Now give me money, 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 money. That's what I want.
Let's turn now to the shocking headlines. This one's not actually that shocking. It says, big U.S. online retailer to accept Bitcoin. This is Financial Times, Thursday, December 19th, 2013. Overstock plans to become the first big U.S. online retailer to accept Bitcoin, as Patrick Byrne, the company's libertarian chief executive, warms to the virtual currency as a refuge from government control. Mr. Byrne told the Financial Times that Overstock planned to start accepting Bitcoin next year, possibly by the end of the second quarter. Wait a minute, what's this? Wired Magazine, January 10th, in first day with Bitcoin, Overstock does $126,000 in sales. You mean they've already done it? Here's another sad and shocking headline. 40 people locked in a room for a week. Actually, it says Bitcoin comes to Overstock after CEO locks 40 people in a room for a week. Okay. They interviewed Patrick Byrne, the CEO of Overstock, about the quickness with which they started accepting Bitcoin. He says, when I was saying we'd be accepting Bitcoin within 6 months, I thought that would be it. But Bitcoin money processors began approaching the company, wanting to partner with it and telling the company it could get Bitcoin going sooner. Coinbase beat out its competitors by promising to fly talent to Salt Lake City to help Overstock get their payment platform up and running. Afraid that he'd tipped his hand by telling the press about the company's Bitcoin plans, Byrne decided to make it happen as soon as possible. On January 1st, our people said they could do it within 10 days if I gave them enough people, says Byrne. So we put a team of 40 people on it. We locked them there in a room and slid pizzas under the door and gave them hotel rooms when they needed them. The technique of swarming to form a team was incredibly efficient. The team was mainly engineers, but it also included customer care, graphics artists, a lawyer, a tax man, and our returns guy, says Byrne. They knocked it out in less than 10 days. Oh my goodness gracious.
Overstock.com has given Bitcoin a big endorsement. It is the first major online retailer to accept the controversial digital currency. Overstock.
Controversial digital currency? How about innovative digital currency? Where do they choose these words?
CEO Patrick Byrne joins me now. Is this a publicity stunt, or are you a true believer in Bitcoin?
Oh, I'm a true believer. I come from Austrian economics by background, which we're the guys who like gold or gold-based money. We don't like fiat currency. Love Bitcoin. It's like digital gold. It has all the advantage, or a lot of the advantages of gold. Not at all a publicity stunt. We want to tap in first to that market of consumers who we know are really committed to Bitcoin.
Then he was asked, why do you have all your purchases transferred right into dollars immediately? Why don't you hold any Bitcoin? Are you afraid of holding Bitcoin?
There'd be no reason for us to hold it unless we can start paying our suppliers in it. And so it's kind of a chicken and egg problem. We'll start off not holding it, we're accepting it, and then the day may come when some suppliers let us pay them in it, and at that point we'll start holding more of it and converting less of it, and it should spin up.
And this is where it really gets interesting. Someone goes out to Overstock and buys something in Bitcoin. Overstock takes the Bitcoin and goes to its supplier to buy something in Bitcoin. Its supplier pays its employee's salary in Bitcoin, and the employee then goes out to Overstock.com to buy something using Bitcoin.
Do you expect other retailers to follow your lead?
You sound doubtful, Maggie. Yes, I actually think that this forces the hand of Amazon and some other big players. They have to follow suit.
Patrick, you're right. I am a little skeptical. I understand why people like the idea. I'm a little skeptical about this ability of Bitcoin to go mass market because it's so confusing how you get it. Bitcoin, however, it's complicated. You have to mine it. That seems to me to sort of keep it as a very niche, commodity among a very well-educated sort of technology group. What makes you think it's going to go mass market? How do you overcome that hurdle?
Kind of an interesting question there, isn't it? She says Bitcoin's only for a well-educated group, and Bitcoin is really too difficult to use. You have to mine it. Does that imply that she's not well-educated?
Well, Maggie, I would respectfully disagree. I would suggest your readers go to one of three sites, Coinapult, BitPay, or Coinbase, which is the one that we went through. It takes you about a minute to open a wallet and connect it to your credit card or your bank account. And then from then on, when you shop online, you don't have to enter your details in a bunch of different sites.
You do need to enter your shipping address, I guess, if you want to receive the package at your house. And then she asked him if he was scared of the regulations that might come out about Bitcoin, if the government would try to stop it.
And I think just by nature, it will emerge and the government will hate it. The government likes its monopoly on money, central planning our money supply. So they're going to hate it, but it's going to be hard to see how they're going to stop it.
Oh, yeah, they're going to hate it. And they're not going to hate it because there's bad people out there using it. They're going to hate it because it's competition. And, of course, they're not going to hate it just at the national level. They'll hate it also at the state level, but for a different reason.
Benjamin Lasky is the superintendent of financial services for the state of New York. He joins us now to talk about Bitcoin and actually share with us an announcement that you're working on this front.
Sure. So later this month, January 28th and 29th, we're going to have two full days of hearings related to Bitcoin and the regulation of Bitcoin, whether there should be a special license for Bitcoin, things like that. So we're going to have, it's going to be really two full days, very intensive, a 360-degree view of everything Bitcoin. We're going to have academics, we're going to have technical people, we're going to have law enforcement, we're going to have people in the industry, investors in the industry, really dig deep into understanding everything Bitcoin to decide how we really should be regulating it.
To decide how we should be regulating this, not to decide if we should be regulating this, right? How about if? How about if we regulate? And you know, he mentioned we're going to have two full days to really dig down and understand Bitcoin. Hey, dude, I've been working at this thing for months, and I haven't figured it all out yet.
But everybody is trying to do this. I mean, Carl and I spoke to Tom Carper, Senate Homeland Committee, earlier this week. They've been holding hearings. A number of congressional hearings have already happened. What's different, and why do you have to take this up at the state level?
So, 2 points. One is, I think we're going to need a lot of coordination between state and federal regulators.
As he continues, let me translate the words of Mr. Lawski into plain English. For example, here he was saying, we are going to try to kill this thing.
Money transmission has traditionally been regulated by the states, and now we're going to have this new question about Bitcoin and how it should be regulated, and that is primarily, at least the beginning, a state question.
By regulation, of course, he means taxation.
At the same time, it raises enormous anti-money laundering, Bank Secrecy Act issues, which are both state and federal issues. We often coordinate with our federal partners on that.
Once again, if we can't see it, we can't tax it.
And I think the second point is, I think the federal hearings have been largely about law enforcement efforts thus far. Again, our hearings are going to be a little broader and really look into not only law enforcement, but also the markets, how this should be regulated from a regulatory side and not just the law enforcement side.
Because we don't really care about the criminals, we do care about the taxes.
All that said, you've spent time as an assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District. You've looked into white-collar crime. How much of this is going to focus on the currency's ability to make white-collar crime easier?
Well, I don't think it's going to be our main focus at this hearing.
Because white-collar crime is typically that which is performed by our main sponsors, the big banks. Small businesses and the individuals, what we're going to be focusing on.
At the same time, I think it's very obvious that if we don't regulate Bitcoin in the right way, if we don't regulate other virtual currencies in the right way, they could become a place where you're going to see a lot of bad conduct. And we've already seen
people,
we've seen a couple of cases
taxes.
In a place where I used to work in the Southern District already. You have the Manhattan DA who's working very hard on these issues as well. There's no question that a lot of the anonymity that virtual currencies provide can lead to real problems.
problems because we can't see where that guy is that we need to tax.
The question is, can we allow virtual currencies and all these new technologies to grow? We want New York to be a place where these companies are coming and thriving.
So that we can tax the living bejesus out of them.
At the same time, put in the rules of the road and the protections to make sure we don't have money laundering.
What's a bit license?
Well, it's a term we've been using for this question of should we tailor our licensing procedures. Right now, we license MoneyGram. We license Western Union. Should we have a special license when it comes to money transmission with virtual currency?
You're going to do business in our state. You're going to need a license.
What's the answer?
Bitcoin. Answer is that's what our hearings are going to really look at closely and examine. We want to be thoughtful about it and do it the right way.
We want to think as long and hard as we possibly can to extort the maximum amount of taxes from this new system. I thought at one point in time I heard somebody say something about government is by the people, of the people, for the people, with the people are the government, something like that. I don't know. But so in this case, if that's true, who are there people out in the streets rioting, asking for New York State to regulate Bitcoin? Are the people really up in arms about Bitcoin not being regulated at this point? Who is it that's asking for Bitcoin to be regulated? Who could it be? Who could it be?
MoneyGram.
And who else?
Western Union.
Now it's all starting to make sense. Well, down in Richmond, Virginia, Federal Reserve President Jeffrey Lacker was asked on CNBC about Bitcoin.
It's private money. They're going to have trouble gaining market share if its value is going to fluctuate so much. But it'll be interesting to watch.
But what is the position of the Fed from a policy perspective, if there is one? Or what do you think the position of the U.S. government should be on Bitcoin? Or other virtual currencies?
For what they're doing, it's a free market, and I don't see why we have an interest in stopping it.
Has he not read the Congressional Research Services report that just came out in December called Bitcoin: Questions, Answers, and Analysis of Legal Issues? Well, I guess since he's the Fed president and this is a congressional report, maybe he hasn't read it. On page 4 of the report, Would Bitcoins Affect the Fed's Conduct of Monetary Policy? It says, at Bitcoin's current scale of use, it is likely too small to significantly affect the Fed's ability to conduct monetary policy and achieve these goals. However, if the scale of use were to grow substantially larger, there could be some reason for concern. Conceptually, in italics, Bitcoin could have an impact on the conduct of monetary policy to the extent that it would, 1, substantially affect the quantity of money, or 2, influence the velocity, that is, rate of circulation, of money through the economy by reducing the demand for dollars. And then on page 5 it says, the U.S. economy reaps considerable benefit from having a single, well-defined and stable monetary unit to work as a medium of exchange and unit of account to facilitate its vast number of daily economic transactions. If greater use of Bitcoin leads to multiple monetary units, these benefits could be threatened, particularly if these new currencies continue to exhibit a high degree of price volatility. Well, we will be watching to see if and when Jeffrey Lacker reads this paper. In the meantime, let's hear from Lionel.
This year, it's imperative and incumbent upon you to learn about Bitcoin. And don't expect the Ted Baxter sock puppet mainstream media to give you not so much an accurate explanation, but a fair one. Now, the terms used to describe Bitcoin, such as virtual currency and cryptocurrency, might give you the belief that it's over your head. Believe me, it's not. So, what is Bitcoin? First, it's not a coin. It's not physical. It's digital currency. That is, it's money controlled and stored entirely by computers spread over the internet. No governments or central banks like the Federal Reserve can control it. Now, do you see why the ruling class is less than thrilled with this? Next, Bitcoins are in limited supply. The system will stop producing bitcoins when it reaches 21 million, which is designed to happen somewhere around the year 2140. Let me repeat what's critical. Bitcoin can't be watered down by a central authority or government like the Fed. And in addition to being a currency like the dollar or euro, it's a way of making payments like PayPal or credit card networks. And it's anonymous, but it's not foolproof or perfect. It's brand new, so be careful. But as we speak, it's spreading throughout the world lightning fast. And you're going to see more and more businesses accepting it as a payment. It's the perfect storm of the internet and currency combining. So read up, stay tuned, and comment as you see fit.
Well, I have a comment, and it's about this overstock accepting Bitcoin thing. But first, let's listen to Brian Armstrong, co-founder and CEO of Coinbase, the company that helped overstock accept Bitcoin.
Now, with a company like Overstock accepting Bitcoins, how complicated is that? You know, you guys are processing all of this. What does that involve?
Sure. Well, we did an integration with them, which essentially allows them to mitigate their exchange rate risk. So they're accepting Bitcoin payments, but they actually are converting it just out to dollars. They never need to hold Bitcoin. It's really just a cheaper way for them to accept payments from anybody all over the world.
So I've heard that about Bitcoin, that it's cheaper for merchants to accept Bitcoin than it is to accept a credit card. You know, as an example of that, the website gift.com, G-Y-F-T, where you buy gift cards, you can buy them using, I guess, a credit card, or you can buy them using perhaps PayPal or Bitcoin. Well, if you buy them with Bitcoin, they give you more of a bonus back, more of a cash back type bonus. So for them, yes, it's true, they have less fees in using Bitcoin. And apparently Overstock now has less fees, less costs when they use Bitcoin. So where are those savings in fees going? I guess they're going to Overstock. Why aren't they being passed along to the customer? If Bitcoin is cheaper, why don't they give a discount for buying in Bitcoin? You know, the irony is, if you go to gift.com and buy a gift card for Overstock, then you get some bonus rewards from Gift for using Bitcoin, and then you spend the money at Overstock using the gift card. I don't know why, in that case, it makes sense to go directly to Overstock to buy something. Of course, you have to buy the gift card at just the right amount. You know, if you're buying something from Overstock for $100, then you need to buy a gift card for $100. And those kinds of details. But if Overstock really wants to promote Bitcoin, why not give a discount to its customers for using Bitcoin? That will incentivize customers who see that there's a 1, 2, 3% discount for using Bitcoin to go out and get the Bitcoins to spend at Overstock.com. That way they save and you save. I say don't wait for Overstock.com to come up with a discount. Go to Gift.com, and I'm proud to announce right here that the Mad Money Machine is now sponsored by Gift.com. Wow, I used them before they sponsored the show. Now, Gift.com is about more than just spending your Bitcoins. You can buy gift cards with your credit card or PayPal. Gift Points is their loyalty program that rewards you for shopping with Gift. Every gift card purchase you make in the app or the website earns you gift points to get discounts off future gift card purchases. Earn points just by shopping with Gift. Spend a dollar with a credit card, earn 1 point. Spend a dollar with PayPal, earn 2 points. Earn triple points by purchasing with Bitcoin. Spend $1 in Bitcoin, earn 3 points. Earn 100 points and redeem your $1 off your future gift card purchases. And they'll also alert you when they run point promotions. Now, what gift cards can you buy? Amazon, Banana Republic, Bath & Body Works, CVS Pharmacy, GameStop, Nike, Old Navy, Sears, Staples, Target, Victoria's Secret, AMC Theaters, Brookstone, Crutchfield, Fandango. On, and they're adding more all the time. Gift.com is a Mad Money Machine recommended pick. GYFT.com. Let's take a minute to look at the market. Statistics come from blockchain.info and prices come from Mt. Gox. The total number of bitcoins in the world is 12.22 million. The total market value, therefore, of all bitcoins $11.23 billion. The miner's reward per block, $22,932. And the amount of transaction fees a miner gets per block is averaged at about $71. There are about 56,000 transactions per day. That means 345 transactions per block, or about 0.6 transactions per second. The highest traded price in the past week, according to Mt. Gox, is $1.02 per millibit, and the lowest was 86 cents. That's your Mad Money Machine Market Minute. I love that guy screaming at the end there. Well, so what does it mean? What does it mean? What do we mean when we say what is the price of a Bitcoin? It's a little bit different than say what is the price of a new MacBook Air, because Apple just controls the price. Yeah, you might find a discount someplace, but there's no place. Apple doesn't sell a Bitcoin for a certain price. The price of a Bitcoin, just like price of stocks and bonds and everything else that's sold and gold and all of that, it changes depend on circumstances and the market. First of all, we have to ask, where is that price? And in this case, the prices I was looking at were from the Mt. Gox exchange. That's the place, maybe not physical place, maybe physical place, where people get together and buy and sell Bitcoins for a currency. And then, of course, next thing we have to ask is, what currency are we talking about? Are we talking about dollars or euros or yen or anything else? I'll talk about dollars, of course, mostly. I'm in the United States. And then we talk about, is that the bid price or the ask price? Bid being what someone is willing to offer you to buy your Bitcoin. And the ask price is what someone is willing to sell their Bitcoins that they already have to you for. And it's the meeting of those two, the bid price and the ask price. When those meet and the trade happens, that is the exchange. That's the trade price that we typically look at when we talk about what is the price right now of a Bitcoin. Well, it's a new year, and that means new New Year's resolutions. And what's the most popular New Year's resolution? Why, of course, it's losing weight. And we have a solution for you. It's called the Bitcoin Diet. With more on how to lose weight, here's Andreas M. Antonopoulos.
I first discovered Bitcoin in 2010. I heard about it. I thought, nerd money, sounds funny. And then I ignored it for another 6 months. And then I rediscovered Bitcoin in 2011. And that time I decided to read the Satoshi paper. My background is in security and distributed systems, so I wanted to read the actual science behind it and try to understand it from a technical perspective. So I started reading the Satoshi paper. If you haven't read it, you should definitely read it. It's 9 pages. It's one of the most brilliant pieces of science writing. Every single word in that paper means something.
Yeah, but how do we lose weight?
Satoshi was able to predict several things that took years to unfold in Bitcoin. And just outlined every aspect of the currency in just 9 pages, which is incredible. I mean, it would have taken me 100 pages to say the same things.
Yeah, and it's taken you hours to get to the weight loss part. Come on, man.
So read that paper. When I started reading that paper, a little light bulb went off in my head, light bulb, supernova-sized light bulb. And it just completely overwhelmed me because immediately I realized this is not a currency. It's not a currency, it's a network, it's a platform, it's an invention.
And a weight loss tool, right?
And once I realized that, the possibilities just started unfolding in my mind, and I went into a state of fugue that's happened to me 4 times before in my career. First computer I had, the first internet connection, the first website I visited, the first time I downloaded Linux.
The first time I hopped on a scale.
All of those were just revelatory experiences for me, and they put me in a state of obsession. I wanted to learn everything about these technologies. And for a long time, during the, 98 to 2010 period, I didn't see anything else that really excited me as much. And then Bitcoin just hit me in the face like a sledgehammer.
Or like a meringue pie.
And so I spent the next 6 months obsessively consuming and writing and coding and reading everything I could about Bitcoin until I lost so much weight that my family staged a mini intervention.
There we go. Finally, the weight loss part.
Because I had stopped eating from the obsession. Yeah, not a healthy way to do it. I have a better balance now.
And what would that be? A mixture of Bitcoins along with Litecoins and Feathercoins?
But that's the kind of impact that Bitcoin had on me, because it was something that aligned my interests and my passion for technology with my core principles, social justice and pacifism and ending war, you know, things that obviously are impossible to do, but things that I aspire to, you know.
Well, there you have it. That's the secret recipe for the Bitcoin diet. Get so obsessed with Bitcoin that you stop eating and you lose weight. Now, I've heard on other shows that he said he lost about 26 pounds on the Bitcoin diet. You too can lose 20, 30, even 50 pounds on the Bitcoin diet. So get a copy of that Satoshi paper, close your door, and unlike the guys at Overstock.com, they won't be sliding pizzas under your door. Without further ado, let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of Bitcoin gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll with the marble. And for the selected guru, give you a little background on their Bitcoin philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Madman Machine January 15th, 2014 is Ed Moy. Edmund C. Moy, born September 12, 1957, is an American businessman and former government official. From 2006 to 2011, he served as the 38th Director of the United States Mint. And he wrote an article recently in Money News magazine, "Why is China dissing the Bitcoin?" In the article, he writes, "In addition to banning banks from handling Bitcoin transactions in November, China banned financial institutions like third-party payment providers in December. The Chinese government also announced that it does not recognize Bitcoin as a currency, but does recognize it as a virtual commodity. As a result, Chinese citizens can still trade Bitcoin at their own risk, but cannot use Bitcoin as an alternative to the renminbi to buy goods and services. What was the motivation behind this move? To understand why the Chinese government is not crazy about the Bitcoin, one has to understand two facts about China. It has a goal to dominate the world economy, and centralization is the organizing principle of the Chinese Communist Party." And so I might just add a sentence here, and that would be, to understand why the U.S. government is not crazy about Bitcoin, one has to understand two facts about the U.S. It has a goal to dominate the world economy, and centralization is the organizing principle of the two Republican and Democratic parties. Well, he continues in saying in his article, the government needed to clamp down on Bitcoin before it gained enough momentum to threaten the government's monopoly on currency. After all, if Bitcoin became a medium of exchange for economic transactions, the currency in that country would lose market share, and that country would lose the power and influence to manipulate their people and their destiny. He continues, centralization is the very nature of the government there. For those in power, there is no current conceivable need to decentralize something as important as their control over currency and cede it to Bitcoin, which they cannot control. Later in the article, he continues, there are also immediate and practical reasons for the government coming down on Bitcoin, because Bitcoins trade globally and there's some anonymity with owner names. It could be a method for citizens to transfer their wealth out of that country without the usual foreign exchange controls. And wrapping up the article, he says, looking beyond the volatility and these early setbacks in clearly what is a long-term game, the bigger and more important picture is being missed. The country is afraid of Bitcoin because of its real potential to disrupt its plan for economic supremacy. Bitcoin, by its very nature, is decentralized. It is subject to the free market and the trust between two people doing a transaction, not by the fiat of a government mandating its own will and purposes. Consequently, that country's ban actually validates cryptocurrencies and their transformational possibilities. Well, congratulations, Ed Moy. You're the guru on Madman and Machine for 15 January. If you're listening to this show via podcast or through a web browser, you may be able to see the Mad Money Machine logo that I've drawn up. It shows a blue field with a red foreground and a black line curving from bottom left to upper right. Now, in the original Mad Money Machine investment show, that curve represented the efficient frontier, which is a graph of reward versus risk. So as you go up on the left side, for reward, you go across to the right, you have more risk. Now that Mad Money Machine is a Bitcoin show, that curve represents the total number of Bitcoins generated over time. Let's turn now to a few other stories in the news.
More U.S. businesses are jumping on that so-called Bitcoin bus. It's causing a price rebound. Zynga is the latest, announcing in a Reddit post over the weekend that it's accepting Bitcoin for in-game purchases for game offerings like Farmville 2 and Castleville.
And here are some more headlines that popped up in my CryptoKit Google News section. Will overstock force the IRS to make up its mind about Bitcoin? Forbes magazine. Why more businesses may adopt Bitcoin? USA Today. Coinbase and Bitmonet deal enables Bitcoin-friendly Android apps. And New York City is getting its first Bitcoin ATM. And this one from Wired. PayPal president says company believes in Bitcoin. Well, I believe in you. You're the sponsor of this show. Now, in addition to 120 seconds per show of corporate sponsorships, I do accept listener sponsorships. I'm set up to accept Bitcoin out of my website, madmoneymachine.com. Send over $20, I'll give a shout out to you on the show. Send over $100 and I'll read a short note from you on the show. And I'll be unveiling some special reward levels as we go forward. This is it, folks. This is all I do, the Mad Money Machine. So please help support the show if you like it. Well, I think that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Mad Money Machine. I can't wait till next time. There's a whole lot more to talk about. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you'll consider supporting the show. We're going to have a lot of fun. In the meantime, buy some Bitcoin and spend some Bitcoin and then replenish your Bitcoin. This is Paul Boyer saying it takes money to make money and it takes Bitcoin to make a Mad Money Machine. Email me, bitcoin@madmoneymachine.com. Find me on all social media, Mad Money Machine. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Reddit. I'll see you next week.